Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and it's all sponsored by Dollar Shave Club. Stop spending a fortune on gimmicky shave tech you don't need. Make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. Get your first month for only $5 with free shipping by going to dollarshaveclub.com/martini. And Jim, for our good martini, we head out to the California Democratic Party. This is courtesy of Politico, but hat tip to Hot Air for pointing out the story. Longtime party operative Eric Bauman won the chairmanship of the California Democratic Party over the weekend, but his victory was marred by complaints of ballot stuffing and floor protests. Backers of the Kimberly Ellis activist wing of the party, and she was a favorite of the Bernie-crat brigade, say efforts to scrutinize the votes will begin immediately. The unprecedented effort to examine the documentation of the disputed state party's election results was announced by outgoing California Party Chair John Burton at the close of a raucous state Democratic convention this weekend. Ellis, the former director of Emerge America, a women's political organization, lost the election by just 62 votes out of 3,000 cast. Her loss immediately set off protests from hundreds of her backers, many of whom charged, get this, Jim, that there were irregularities that included allowing voters to cast proxy ballots without proper ID. So, Jim, we have a contested result in the vote for the Democratic Party chairman in California. And the delicious irony is that voter ID for a party chairmanship is now an issue. But of course, we can't allow that to actually be involved in regular elections.
As much as we're chuckling over this, like Republicans, if they are smart, will point to this and say, yeah, this actually proves exactly what we mean. In other words, there's always a concern that someone will cheat. This is just human nature. People want to win and people will be tempted to cut corners. And if they have the possibility of voting for a proxy vote that they're not entitled to or in violation of the rules or laws, they're going to feel that temptation to do it. And voter ID is a simple way to take care of this. A voter ID is a way to say, okay, one man, one vote, one person, one vote. And you can resolve it. Now, is there any pushback, Greg, of people say, wait a second. This violates what we argue for federal elections. So no, we can't require ID to vote in a party in a party election. Which, oh, by the way, if that's the case, if they do go along with this, at the very least, you could be able to require ID for voting in primary elections, if not for general elections.
Here's the even more fun part, because you would think that in an intra-party situation here, there would be a lot of tolerance and understanding and trying to explain how things might work out in a smoother way. No. Feelings erupted Sunday in a chaotic scene on the floor of the Sacramento Convention Center, the final day of the three-party convention, as Bauman was introduced as the new chairman. Ellis's supporters, waving signs that read, "Validate the votes and resist corporate Democrats," demanded a recount. But outgoing party chairman and longtime San Francisco politician John Burton told the delegates the party's bylaws don't provide for a recount. He explained that the rival camps agreed the ballots, which are signed by each voter, would be counted and inspected soon, and that Ellis had not asked for a recount or to delay the proceedings. As Ellis's supporters continued to press him by citing parliamentary procedures, the famously profane Burton grew frustrated, extending a middle finger to the audience. So apparently it's not just for Donald Trump that they flip the bird and use profane language. A lot of good logic there that the bylaws don't allow for a recount, and then they're upset that the candidate didn't request one. So Democrats, not exactly as united as they'd have us believe, it would appear.
You know, because it's California, Greg, we legitimately can say, you stay classy, San Diego. Now, the other thing, I just go back to that part where he says there's really no provision for a recount. How complicated you take the ballots and you count them again. There's nothing in the party rules. So suppose they had a vote that came down to one. They wouldn't bother recounting, right? They would just say there's no possibility of an error in the counting of these ballots at all. Look, I'm not saying the Republican Party doesn't have its own, you know, fairly significant problems, but if you're a Democrat out there in California, you got to be looking at this institution and saying, why am I a part of this? These guys talk a good game about counting every vote and respecting the will of the people and all that kind of stuff. But if their response to a question of, you know, do you have a, of, you know, well, we have a close election, we would like a recount to make sure the right person won. No, we don't have any. We just can't do that. We just don't have anything in the rules to take care of that. So it can never happen. You know, I don't want to hear anything from any Democrat ever again about the 2000 recount.
It's rigged. Rigged, Jim.
Anybody? Rigged, yes.
Democrats the Russians hacked it, according to more people, according to a poll now than like 6 months ago, even though there's absolutely zero evidence of actual Russian hacking of the vote totals whatsoever. But I guess if you use the headline, Russians hacked the election enough times, that's what people that's the conclusion people come to. So the answer to California Democrats is yes, everyone really is out to get you.
Democrats are just not good at close elections. I'm thinking of all the lucky coin flips Hillary Clinton got in Iowa when all those ended up.
For a long time, we said we weren't good at close elections. We were the ones who kept losing them by 1 or 2%. But yes, it is the outsiders and the Democrats who do tend to end up just short of where they needed to be time and again. In a recurrence that it's hard to begrudge the Bernie supporters and folks like that for wondering if somebody's thumb was on the scale.
All right, let's move to the bad martini. Speaking of Republicans losing close elections, this is courtesy of The Hill. Democrat John Ossoff is 7 points ahead of Republican Karen Handel in the race for Georgia's 6th congressional district seat, according to a Survey USA survey released Monday. 51% of likely and actual voters in Georgia say they would vote for Ossoff if the election were held today. 44% said they would vote for Handel, while 6% are undecided. The runoff will be held June 20th. It's already the most expensive House race in history, with outside groups pumping in $18 million. So, Jim, we were enjoying the fact that a couple of weeks ago, after Ossoff barely missed winning this outright, that he hadn't moved the needle much. Now he looks, at least in this one poll, to be over 50%. And there's not a lot Karen Handel can do with that 6% undecided. She can obviously try to change a lot of minds in the intervening 4 weeks here, but it's an uphill climb for Republicans in a district that hasn't been represented by a Democrat since disco was popular.
Yeah, and no, it's not making a comeback for anybody who's looking at the bell bottoms in their closet. Look, this is where we should insert all the proper caveats of this is only one poll. There was another one that had them close to neck and neck. This is a generally Republican district. It's very tough to poll in special elections, et cetera, et cetera. But this comes on the heels of the Washington Post poll that had Ed Gillespie down significantly to either Democrat in the general election polling for the Virginia governor's race. And, you know, we can say that there's not been a ton of coverage of the Virginia gubernatorial election. The Democrats are running ads against each other, and Gillespie's running a few ads. But by and large, this is very low profile. So a poll, both of this one in Virginia or this one, you know, people in the Georgia district can tell you there have been more ads out there. But it's not hard to imagine that this race is being seen as a proxy vote on President Trump. That it's something of a referendum on how things are in mid-May, and that the, you know, special House election out in Montana is going to be the same way. Mm-hmm. Well, not looking great. The president's approval rating is not high. I know that his fans insist, oh, they don't matter. Oh, the media is against him. Oh, you know, there's all kinds of excuses you can make. But the public is not really feeling warm and fuzzy towards Republicans right now. We can see, you know, will this matter? Well, we're about to know a lot more in the not-too-distant future than we know now. Maybe the people who are anti-Trump aren't going to come out to vote. Maybe they'll grumble and they'll say so to a pollster, but they won't turn out to vote. Now, the thing is, there's always a possibility that they will. And I think there's a chance if you're a Democratic activist right now, you're probably mad as heck and spitting fire and, you know, just chomping at the bit. You just can't wait to get out there and vote. And I don't know if Republicans are the same way in these districts. So we will know more in the not too distant future. But if, you know, if Republicans lose either one of these special House elections, then yeah, it probably is time to panic, or at the very least be greatly concerned about the outlook for the midterms. And Republicans are going to have to start putting some points on the board and, you know, passing legislation and looking like they're actually making changes to improve Americans' lives.
Yeah, and you mentioned Montana. That vote is tomorrow. There have just been reports that the mail-in vote has been very high, about 250,000 in Montana. That's pretty darn high, especially for a special election. And there's also a new poll out there showing the Republican up only 6 points, 49-43, Gianforte over Rob Quist. You know, he's the the guy who wants you to go in your garage and turn the car on without opening the garage door to figure out global warming. And he's also the nudist camp crooner. And he's actually within striking distance now. And they say among the 2/3 of voters who are definitely going to vote, it's a 1-point race. So perhaps Democrats are getting their hopes up a little too high there, since no matter what their scenario, the Republicans still ahead, but perhaps closer than it ought to be. All right. Hopefully, smart choices will be made in Montana and Georgia in those upcoming special elections. And we need to tell you that Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice when it comes to a good, clean, inexpensive shave. Let's talk about Dollar Shave Club, because you will get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door, so you don't have to go out and get the stuff. It really is a no-brainer choice. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gives you a cheap shave, or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech that you don't need. As I've mentioned several times now, I'm a Dollar Shave Club customer, and what you get is quality product. You get the Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor, you get the month-long supply of blades, and then you get the Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, which the blade glides ever so gently over and gives me such a smooth shave. Now, you think Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, it sounds like something that might be sold off the back of a covered wagon back in the 19th century. Dr. Carver's elixir or something. This is a quality product. Dr. Carver, whoever he is, did a really good job putting the shave butter together. It's almost more like a lotion than a shaving cream. It's transparent for a more precise shave, helps prevent ingrown hairs, and fights razor bumps.
Now, listeners to the Three Martini Lunch podcast can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, as a new member, you can get the first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for just $5 and free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. That is a $15 value for just $5. In your first month box, you'll get the awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of 4 cartridges, and a tube of the Shave Butter. And after your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees and no commitments, and you can cancel anytime you like.
And there's nothing not to like. Look at that. No hidden fees, no commitments, and it just shows up right to your door at a very inexpensive price. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. One more time, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, onto our crazy martini now. And yesterday, of course, we devoted our entire podcast to the horrific terrorist attack at the concert in Manchester. At this point, 22 dead, scores more injured, and as we're finding out more and more of the victims, unfortunately, it's young people. Just rips out your heart when you see these lives just taken out with such a heinous attack. And of course, there are efforts to explain it, to understand it, and then there's the less than logical ways of people trying to explain this and move on. We've got the media, of course, talking about the need to worry about backlashes. And then there's Katy Perry. Jim, you write about this in the Morning Jolt today, and I'm quoting you now. There's not too much point in fuming about Katy Perry's saccharine to the point of insulting comments about the Manchester bombing. Her declaration that, quote, "I think the greatest thing we can do is just unite and love on each other. No barriers, no borders. We all just need to coexist." And Jim, I'll let you elaborate on your reaction to that, since that's what the rest of the Jolt post is about. But what do you make when we constantly get that reaction to heinous atrocities like this?
You know, I'm not going to begrudge Katy Perry that much, because we've all seen some sort of horrible tragedy and kind of struggled to find the right words. I kind of want to, you know, I'm willing to forgive a lot. I'm willing to understand that you're on a radio show, you're speaking extemporaneously, and maybe you don't hit quite the note that you want to hit. No pun intended. But I'm sorry, Katy Perry. No, that's really not the problem here. And we do kind of get this. I don't know if it goes all the way back to the LA riots and the statement, "Can't we all just get along?" We kind of want to have this feeling of, oh, if everyone was just nicer, this wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't have this problem. But the problem wasn't, you know, as she says, "I think the greatest things we just unite, love on each other, no barriers, no borders. We all need to just coexist." Look, the vast, vast, vast majority of the people in Manchester the other night had no problem coexisting. You could point out there's basically just one person in the entire city who had that kind of a problem. And in fact, once there was a crisis, there was plenty of unity. There was plenty of love. There was plenty of happy coexistence. you know, but then you got to see the numbers that, you know, overnight they raised $1 million to help the families for those who'd lost loved ones and to, you know, deal with the costs involving with that. So many people donated blood that the blood banks in the Manchester area say they're full and they can't take any more contributions. Now, if you're in the Manchester area or anywhere really, and you feel like donating blood, go out and do so like a week from now. They're still going to need it eventually. Blood does not last forever. A lot of blood banks and emergency services get these sorts of reactions when there's a terrible crisis. Everybody rushes to help out. And then a month later, 6 weeks later, they're back to their usual needing more. Everyone opened up their homes with the Open for Manchester campaign for anybody who was stuck and couldn't get home that night. You know, look, the problem is not society at large. And I kind of think that Katy Perry goes to this default setting of, oh, we must have done something. That if we just were nicer and we sent out good vibes and we tried to be more loving to each other, the world wouldn't have these problems. Now, these all might be good things to have. Go, if you say hello to people as they walk down the street, smile, be nice to each other, help help old ladies across the street. Yes, go out and be a nice and good person. But that's not really going to have much of an impact on the issue of Islamist terrorism. There is nothing we've done to provoke this. We cannot nice our way out of this. Yesterday during the other section, I put in the corners, we can't security barrier our way out of it. The only way to stop a suicide bomber is basically to catch them before they strap the bomb on. Once they put the bomb on themselves, it's just a matter of them getting to a location that is sufficiently crowded and pressing the button. Sometimes you can see security services intervene in a circumstance like that, but it's really difficult. So I kind of, you know, again, it's Katy Perry. I'm not expecting her. It's not like she works at RAND. It's not like she works at Heritage or the Brookings Institution or anything like that. I'm not expecting detailed counterterrorism policy from her. But I do think that there is this minor annoyance, and I'm a little bit surprised that there's nobody around Katy Perry. I don't know who her friends are, who her crowd is, that there's no one around her who would say, actually, the problem isn't really about peace and coexistence. The problem is that there is a small segment of both Western societies and in Islamist societies. So people say, oh, you know, the Manchester bombing shows we need to close our borders and not allow in immigrants and not allow in refugees. Well, this guy was born there. You know, it's not like he snuck across the border or something like that. Now, there were some really ominous reports. You know, we've talked about the idea of the known wolf, Greg. Increasingly, we went back to Libya. I saw this fascinating report for his imam at his local mosque in Manchester preached against ISIS. This is exactly what we want from Islamist leaders. And he said that when he preached his message against ISIS, he said that the bomber, quote, showed me the face of hate after my speech on ISIS. I could tell this person does not like me. It's not a surprise to me. Mr. Imam, I hope you then reported him, right? I hope you then said or did something, because when you say, no, ISIS is a terrible force in the world, they are killing innocent people, and it is the duty of every Muslim to oppose this, and somebody gets really, really upset by that, that should set off some red flags. But apparently this guy was on the watch list already. There's a desperate need, instead of talking about peace and coexistence and love and all the stuff Katy Perry's talking about, I think it's time for a really blunt discussion about how many people are on the watch list. And if we have hundreds of people and can't watch them 24/7, then we have a really serious problem in our society that you know, either we need enormous more resources for our domestic surveillance agencies, groups like the FBI here in the United States or MI5 over in the UK, or we need some better way of filtering through all these known wolves and sorting out the guy who's just kind of a nut job and mouthing off every now and then to the guy who's actually going to do something as awful as what happened in Manchester last night. So, again, it's not like we expect that much better from celebrities, but it was worth emphasizing that this talk about the collective need to fight terrorism. Look, no, you had nothing to do with this, and it's time to stop blaming society as a whole for the actions of particular individuals.
No, I think that's very well said. And it's interesting that a lot of the response over there has not been to the larger issue of the portion of Islamic followers who believe that this is a legitimate way of dealing with their grievances. Theresa May never mentioned the larger issue in her speech on Tuesday. And as I look at that Katy Perry statement, Jim, when it says we all need to coexist, well, when I think of the bumper sticker coexist and the sea is the crescent moon, there's a distinct portion of the sea that wants to kill the O, the E, the X, the I, the S, and the T. So coexisting is going to require a little bit of work, and we need to focus on that.
The O exist part really has very little problem with the rest of it, among itself. It's the K part that that Jensen Huyman, and we should point out not everyone involved in the K part is the problem, but unfortunately there's the, you could say the pointy tip of the K, the C, really is the problem there. And that's, you know, and it's one of the things I think Trump was trying to get at in his speech in Saudi Arabia. And hopefully we will see more action on this front. It's good to see this imam clearly was appeared to be preaching the right message at his mosque, but not everybody was receptive to the message and not enough was done to intervene before the terrible deed was done.
Jim, on that note, we'll call it for today. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our friends at Dollar Shave Club. Remember, you can get a great deal right now exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. And join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.